Wyman and Bob.
On Seattle Sports Station. Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com. Another short show today, Dave. We've got Game 2 of the Mariners series with the Boston Red Sox. Four-game series. So, pregame happening at 3 o'clock today, 4:10, first pitch. And, boy, I hope it goes a lot better than it did last night because that was a pig of a game.
It started off great, Bob. I really enjoyed it because I had something to do, so I recorded the game.
Ah, okay.
But I think I left it was 4-0 or
4-4. This is where it's good that you're not on Twitter. Because you're, you know, obviously you're seeing constant updates and reaction to every moment, every pitch, every hit.
Bob, I'm not even on email.
Yeah. Well, that's because they're trying to get you to quit.
But I ain't quitting. I'm telling you.
Yeah. You just fight it. You just fight it. Bump is with us. Michael Bumpus is with us as well. Bump. What do you even say about last night other than, you know, we've been lamenting the offense not being there and just saying, boy, this offense can't put up runs. They were averaging 3.8 runs scored per game going into this one. They score six, and they got drilled. They were about six shy of tying this up. So on a night where the offense shows some life, scores more than their season average, they give up 12.
Yeah, I saw them put up four. I'm like, okay, we're working now, boys. And then the Sox respond with two in the second, two in the third. And It was frustrating because you saw some greatness, right? Some of the things that you want to see, but then you saw some of the same old stuff as well. It's almost like until this pitching rotation is shored up and we can fully believe in the guy on the mound and the batters working at the same time, it just ain't going to work. It's like one side takes their turn kind of being the star of the game. It all has to come together.
Yeah, it's well said because you're right. It's either one or the other. And, you know, Kirby, I don't know what everybody was thinking about him, you know, after his amazing, you know, debut. But, he eight hits. I mean, and now you see that the Boston Red Sox are starting to heat up offensively a little bit. So, yeah, it's discouraging to see that those two can't come together. You know, you get a good night on the mound and not much run production and then vice versa. But, man, I got to say that is really a cool ballpark. I mean, it's very unusual. It's very strange, you know, having to play it off the wall, all that stuff. But I do, and I know during the broadcast, I think Dave Sims was saying, because I've been there, you know, it was probably 20 years ago, but it's very old-fashioned there, very old-fashioned. But their fans get into it, and I think it's a tough place to win.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's...
Although they're 7-10 at home this year, but it just seems like they're starting to heat up.
Well, right now. And even you know, Sims and Blowers and talking about even when they had four runs, you're like, you need more in this ballpark. You just you don't feel secure in that ballpark. You could have a 5 or 6 run lead and feel like, okay, that could disappear pretty rapidly, which it did, and thanks in large part to you know, Trevor Story, who had really been struggling up until last night's game. I mean, he was just a shade over 200, I think, or 210, something like that, coming into the game. And he goes 4 for 4, drives in 7, and he's now hitting 230, which isn't great. But, I mean, he jumped exponentially. So I don't know if he gets well now. All of a sudden, he's gonna be the guy he was in Colorado. I have no idea. But that was the big offseason acquisition for the Red Sox, a player that the Mariners wanted, who you were looking at going, well, kind of glad he didn't land here. He's really stinking it up out there, even though it's early in the season. And, boy, and then he just goes ballistic in this game and just 3 home runs. You're like, you got to be kidding me, man. It was a rough night. It was a rough night out there for various reasons. And, you know, there are some positives. I mean, you know, Julio Rodriguez still doing his thing at the plate, 3 for 5, another home run last night. He's hitting 270 now. That's one of the young guys that's living up to his billing, living up to the hype at this point. I mean, he's killing it in the month of May. He's hitting well overall. He did have that throwing error, which was uncharacteristic, his first of the season. But I don't know how you could be disappointed in anything he's done to this point. He's actually living up to the hype, which is saying a lot because there's a lot of hype attached to him.
You know, I've been watching Winning Time and, you know, the Lakers thing. Mm-hmm. That throw that he made kind of made it sort of paralleled what you would see Mike – Irvin Magic Johnson do, you know, his rookie year. He would make just some amazing plays. But then, you know, every once in a while, you're a young buck, right? And you're going to get too fired up. And I thought he got too fired up on that throw. But, yeah, he's really been good to watch. And then, you got, what is it for Toro? He's hit five in the last six. He's hit safely in five of the last six games. And then I loved the home run from Demo. Three-run home run from him. So, like to see him. He's out there playing shortstop. They gave JP a night off. So, got a little bit of life from those two guys. But, yeah, it was just it was cruising along. Everything looked good. And then all of a sudden, you know, and they ran Hill off the mound pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But then, that was about it.
Yeah, it's been really fun watching Julio. And, Dave, I think that's a great comparison, right? Comparing him to Irvin, trying to make every single play that he can make out there. When really sometimes you're like, all right, let's pump the brakes and live to fight another play. But if he would have made that throw, it would have been amazing, right? And mm-hmm. I think about the play a couple games ago in the outfield. If he would have made that catch, it would have been amazing. But the thing that I see in Julio is this dude's fast. Like, he's not fast for his size. He's not fast for a baseball player. I'm watching him beat out throws at first base. And I always describe guys as floating when they run. When you're fast, it's like you're barely touching the ground. Yeah. That jersey's flapping behind you because you're moving so fast. And, you know, other than all the great things he's done at the plate, I enjoy just watching the young man run, too. I mean, he's stealing every time that he's on. He just looks like a fluid athlete. So, yeah, it's been fun watching Julio grow. And eventually, I really feel like eventually the bats and the pitching, they got to come together for a stretch for these guys.
I remember Deion Sanders watching him return an interception. This was the one where Dave Craig was trying to chase him, and he was chewing up the ground doing it. But watching Deion, like you said, Michael, his feet, like maybe the size of like a half dollar was touching the ground. Like, right. He was barely touching the ground.
Just gliding.
Yes, and just looked like a gazelle just galloping along. That's what Julio looks like, except he's what, 6'3", 225, 230?
He's a big dude, and he moves very, very well, and he's definitely one of the bright spots in this game. Again, we got the pregame show for Game 2 coming up at 3 o'clock. John Morosi will join us at 2:30 to make us feel better about what happened last night and where this team's going. But right now we get a chance to speak with a man who's part of that bullpen and was part of it last night, unfortunately, but get into other things with Sergio Romo, who joins us.
It is time for our player spotlight, everybody, here with Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710. And we've been looking forward to speaking with this guy. Glad he's back in the mix out there in the bullpen, and he's with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Sergio Romo is with us. How are you, man?
Hi, Bob. I'm doing all right, man. Hanging out, you know, glad to be back with the squad. You know, missing a few games there that, you know, kind of makes you miss gaming and competing and stuff, you know, so I'm glad being out there with the guys.
Hey, as far as, I mean, you're a guy that's done it all. You got three World Series rings. You've seen it all. As you entered this clubhouse and saw the youth out here, you seem like a perfect fit. You just seem like you'd be the voice of wisdom. You could talk people off the ledge if they needed to. You could pump them up if they needed whatever they needed. Is that a role that you sort of took on when you came here, or did you just say, you know what, I'm just going to go be me, and however that transpires is how it goes?
That's basically the message I got. Once I even spoke to Jerry, you know, once we agreed and I signed, and once we started talking about what, you know, what they wanted and expected out of me, and it's kind of been, you know, a known thing, you know, coming in, not necessarily being, you know, the one that knows all or whatnot, but come in here and at the very least you're being myself, and with that, you know, entitles me of, you know, I care about these guys, you know, I want everybody, you know, to get their piece of the pie, you know, and you can't do that if you're not here producing and, you know, bringing a certain value every day, you know, so I just really like being here, you know, I feel fortunate about it, and the way they've allowed me to be myself and up to this point, you know, it's been real fun and a good feeling to be around.
Hey, Sergio, you must have a ton of advice. I mean, you're the most well-traveled guy. I mean, and you know, you're 39 now. There's just so much. So do you let the guys just kind of come to you, and or are you proactive? You kind of said, you know, that a little bit. I saw in the spring in an interview that you did that you know, you just kind of wait for guys to come to you. But, man, you have just a ton of knowledge to impart on these young guys.
A lot of it, I mean, I'm still, you know, I base it off of, you know, if guys want more and like more in-depth stuff, yes, I do expect them, you know, to come to me if they have a question, you know, like, and there's still moments where obviously, I'll have to take the first step. You know, there are times where I'll have to be the one to take the first step, and that's fine. And I've done that already. I, if it's seen on the camera or not, like, to me, that's irrelevant, you know? But I've had moments for guys where it's like, I've gone to them going, hey man, like, they're like, last night I had a moment, you know, with a couple of guys, you know, young bucks here, and just walked up to them going, hey, you know, just let them know, you know, this and that, you know, and let them know how it also relates to me as well, you know, and so it's not just me, you know, the older guy telling the younger guy something. It's explaining what happened, you know, what went down, explaining my concepts and theories, you know, about things we can and cannot control, and then let them know that it affects me as well and how I play into me also kind of. You know, and the reason why I'm telling it as well, because I played a part in that, you know, earlier in the game last night. So there's certain things that, yes, I'll give them, you know, the right to, you know, the open door, I guess, mindset, you know, approach to it, where they, you know, they can always come to me, but when it's needed, you know, I'm definitely not afraid to take that first step either.
You know, it always cracks me up. We're talking to a guy who's in his 30s, like he's the old man. Like, you've got,
you'd kill to be 39, Sergio.
Yeah, you got more of your life in front of you than you've lived already. You're still a young man, but I guess in baseball years, yeah, you're an older guy. Is there something, you know, now, Sergio, at this age, this level of experience, that, man, if I wish I knew this when I was 29 or when I was 25 or something, that really could have helped?
Yes. There's actually a few things. The one that kind of stands out the most, that I wish I'd known it was okay to be me. You know, like, I wish I would have known that I was good enough, instead of feeling that I wasn't and being afraid that I wasn't doing enough to be recognized as someone that was not good, like, oh, that guy's super good, or that guy's good, or that guy's one of the best. No, I've always kind of just tried to be good enough here, because I never felt that, you know, when I stack up, I'm thinking about it, I'm 5'10", 170 pounds, like, and I'm looking at these other guys, and I'm just like, not, you know, 6'2", yeah, 215, or, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
And then that's like, and then there's other guys that are like 6'2", and like 240, and there's other guys that are 6'4", or 240, like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just kind of, I don't, you know, I'm just not built like those guys, you know, and I don't throw particularly hard, and I never really had in my career, so. Here I am, 39, which is, yes, it's in life. I totally agree. I have, you know, I'm still young. You know, I got a lot of energy. I got a lot of excitement. Still rather ambitious, you know, but, in baseball, I am, yes, quote unquote, old. Like, to be active, you know, to be playing like I am, you know, let's put it this way. Guy on my team now, right? He's 21, right?
Yep.
Okay, I was graduating high school when he was born. Good thing.
Well, yeah, and you could say, well, you could be like their father's age, but, you know, not, who's counting, man? I mean, you're still playing like a young man. Hey, I wanted to ask you, Sergio, I heard in another interview that you did, you said something about a pitch that your grandpa taught you. Can you tell us about that?
That's my slider.
Yeah.
I've made a career, and I've paid a lot of bills on something that my grandpa taught me on the dirt lot out in front of his house my senior year in college. So I went to school my senior year. At the time, it was Colorado Mesa, in Colorado. Now it's Colorado Mesa University. Mm-hmm. When I went there, it was Mesa State College. But I went to school in Grand Junction, Colorado. So when I went out there, I threw in the fall ball. I threw well, but my slider was, you know, every time it was like a slur, but it was really inconsistent. And when I went home for winter break, I was playing catch with my dad in the dirt lot out in front of my grandpa's house, and my grandpa was just sitting there on a chair. He's watching me throw, watching me play catch with my dad. And I threw my dad a slider, and it was a pretty decent one. And I was like, "Hey, Dad, I literally was talking to my dad and saying, "Hey, Dad, it doesn't do that over there. Why doesn't it do that over there?" And my grandpa, he looked at me and goes, "No, come here." And I said, "All right." So I go over there and he gives me a gesture, like asking me for the ball. So I hand him the ball and he goes, "Here, you know, grab it like this. The concept here, the concept there, there's that finger pressure here, do this and that, and then think this and blah, blah, blah." And I was like, "Okay, cool." So I go and the very first one that I threw my dad, wow, it was much better than the one I had. and so to this day, it's the same grip that I use. I haven't changed it, I feel the main concepts that he has with it, with the grip. I still use those and apply those with the different modifications, because I just kind of refined them a little bit and how I can differentiate and reshape and shape the ball. Not reshape, but shape it differently. You know, bigger ones, you know, slower, bigger ones, shorter, harder ones, you know, some with a little bit more depth, like some more sweepy than others, like, you know, that type of stuff. Like, you know, I would like to think that I tend to do those things on purpose when they happen.
Hey, Sergio, as we said, in baseball years, yeah, you're a veteran, you're an older guy. Have you thought about an end date? Do you think in your mind, yeah, I'd like 2 more years, 3 more years, I want to stop by this age? And then outside of that, you've got such a great way about you, and such a, you know, you're able to communicate so well. I would think that'd be huge for young guys. Would you ever get into coaching? Would you want to be a pitching coach or even a manager?
Those are thoughts that I've had. My playing days, they're more so summed up on when I'm ready to walk through the door. Having spoken to my veterans in the past and asking them on how they knew and how they were all so sure, and each one had their reasons. It could be from a reliever to a starter to a position player that I've asked, and they've all had one thing in common, is that they were 100% sure. That's part of why I'm still playing. It's because I could see the door. I mean, come on, I've been blessed with so many years where I've had to, you know, been able to see the door from a few years ago, you know, from a percentage standpoint, right? You know, where it's such a small percentage of people, you know, well, what is the average career? You know, the average career is 2.5-3 years in the big leagues, you know what I'm saying? So I've surpassed that, you know, tenfold, you know, so... I don't know. You know, I'm not ready. My 10-year-old this year too was like, "Dad, you strike dudes out?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I still do." And he goes, "All right." Like, you know, I'm gonna turn the TV on and watch my dad strike dudes out. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, so like, it's a big motivator on why I'm still being able to chug along, because if my son thinks it, and I still, you know, feel confident that I can at least compete, you know, I'm not gonna do anything that's gonna tarnish my career or my reputation, or, you know, like, I'm not going to hang on to it just because I can't let it go. No, like, when I know it's ready, when I know it's time and I'm ready, like, it's going to happen. It'll happen on its own. And it'll be just like my veterans before me. I'll 100%, you know, and you'll see me walk away. Up until then, I mean, I want to see if the beard reaches the ground, if they'll even allow it. But you know, if the league even allows me to grow my beard down to the ground, I'm going to try to do that. You know, so how many days I have left in this game? You know? So it's I feel blessed and privileged to be able to call myself a major league baseball player, let alone for 14-year veteran. You know, so.
Yeah, it's
yeah, I feel good.
There's a lot there on that resume to be proud of, my friend, and it's fun to watch you out there. We really appreciate you taking the time with us, and wish you the best, and look forward to talking to you again during the season. Thanks so much, Sergio.
Appreciate you guys having me. You know, and see us rise. You know, right now we're not in the position that we kind of anticipated ourselves to be, but the whole point in see us rise is to go up, right? So I think that's where this team is headed. You know, I think this next couple of games and stuff, you guys will see that it's about showing who we are now, and I have a little bit of identity coming. You know, it'll start showing out a little bit. You'll see. So appreciate you guys having me on. Let's go, man.
There you go. There he is, Sergio Romo. Look at that, thrown in the phrase, the catchphrase. See us rise.
See us rise.
I hope he's right.
I'm sorry.
I hope he's right.
Yeah.
These next couple games, he said. So hopefully that's accurate.
I almost told him it's no good on the outside.
It's not. Stay there until you're 59. Pitch until your arm falls off your body.
Well, he brought up a good point, though, and about a word that I don't like to use.
What's that?
His legacy.
Did he say his legacy?
He did not say that. Because he's not fancy pants. He doesn't think that he's hot crap because he had a career. It's a fancy way about talking about your past.
Yeah.
My legacy.
His legacy. Yeah. Bump always talks about his legacy, but we try to steer him away from that.
Yeah, it's all about my legacy, Dave. Yeah, that's all I have.
We're trying to steer Bump in a different direction, just get some different habits going with him. Meanwhile, let's take two.
Kyle Lewis played in his third straight game, and Jaron Kelnick hit his first home run since returning to AAA in the Rainiers' 11-0 win over Sacramento last night.
Well, there's something.
Hey.
There's some positivity. Kyle Lewis is that's three games that are – that, to me, is a bigger deal than Kelnick hitting a home run. I mean, that's great. You want Kelnick to have success and, you know, see success out there, take some of the stress out of his game. But Kyle Lewis being able to play three straight games – that's promising. That gets you excited about the potential of his return, hopefully soon.
I think Kelnick has 6 strikeouts the last 2 games, but I don't want to take the tarnish off of it because he did walk and he had an RBI. He had the home run. So it was nice to see. But, yeah, I'm more excited about Lewis than I am about Kelnick.
Yeah, nice to see Lewis doing this thing. Fellas, I was sitting back and I'm thinking, I'm like, man, they don't have a lot of their guys, right? Haniger's out. Lewis is out. JP took a night off. Kelnick's down in AAA. Brash is gone. Evan White. I'm like, all right, I'm always finding some positives. So I'm like, okay, they don't have all their guys yet. Maybe when Lewis comes back, we'll see a domino effect. Guys get healthy, and then we'll see them rise again.
Justin Thomas leads the PGA Championship at 6 under par in the second round, and Tiger Woods is 4 over par in danger of missing the cut.
You just wanted a reason to play this music for Dave, huh?
Love you, Dave.
Look at the smile on Matt's face. He's never that happy.
That's what I meant. Any day I can annoy Dave Wyman is a good day.
That's what I meant when I said I hate you, Matt. I love you, Matt. This is tragic.
Yeah, Tiger's
over par and in danger of making the cut.
Projected cut is +4. That's where he's at right now.
Pretty
he's,
awesome comeback, though, right? I mean, that the leg injury he had from that car accident was very serious.
Well, they were at one point, according to the story, he's talking about amputation.
Oof.
Yeah. And you can see it. He's limping out there. By the time he gets to that 14th, 15th, 16th hole, there's a limp out there. He's fighting through some stuff right now.
He can't get a cart ride?
Nope.
Nah.
Why not?
Do it.
Against the
Come
rules,
on,
Dave.
Golf. It's See, an this advantage. Is another thing with golf. Oh, you can't ride in a golf cart. Why not? Why can't you take a ride?
Gives him an advantage over the other guys that are forced to walk. All the fat guys.
They don't got screwed up legs and stuff.
Yeah, but they might be out of shape and fat and gasping for air.
Well,
I don't know.
That's definitely the case. I mean, this is a sport where there's a guy named the Walrus. Why? Because he looked like one.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd want a card. But yeah, we went through that with Casey Martin and that whole thing.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. So we'll see what happens with Tiger. Take two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/cyberknife prostate. Coming up, the man to make us feel better about last night. Yeah, he's guaranteed to put a smile on your face at the very minimum. It is going to be our weekly conversation with John Morosi coming your way next. It's Wyman and Bob with Michael Bumpus in today. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It's the conversation we look forward to each and every week, Dave, and it's always perfect that he seems to show up after a tough night for this Mariner team. He's the guy to make us feel better about how things are going to go for this team because last night was a bit of a dog. But joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline is the one, the only, John Morosi, our MLB and NHL insider, brought to you by Stanford's Restaurant. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Bob and Dave. And I'll say this, that the one unique thing about last night's challenging loss, I suppose there's a couple of unique things. Number one was the pitching change that wasn't. And number two is I was there to see it because that was our MLB Network broadcast. So, of course, you were not able to watch it in Seattle because of the local rights. So we were available in all markets except for Boston and Seattle last night. But the key thing was I was there. I was at Fenway. I witnessed the game. And so I've got some firsthand observations of the local nine.
And the one thing we always say, you know, amongst baseball fans, especially, you know, those of us that have been watching a long time, is you'll always see something you've never seen before. Baseball can produce those moments. As many games as you've been to or watched, there'll be a moment where you go, huh, haven't noticed that, never noticed that, or never seen that before. And last night, for me, I had never seen that. You just, you know, alluded to what was going on with the pitching change when, you know, they wanted to bring Romo in, take Kirby out, but Kirby had crossed the line, the baseline. Had you ever seen that before?
I had not. And here's the brief synopsis of what I believe transpired there. There is a new rule about this, and this has been part of baseball for a long time where often to buy extra time for the reliever to get ready, the existing pitcher will go out and warm up, and then the manager will come out and make the change. Now, that has changed. That rule has changed in MLB in the interest of pace of play and shortening the game, obviously. And there was some confusion, and to Scott Service's credit, he took responsibility for not being fully versed on the rule, but he did ask at least one member of the umpiring crew, according to what Scott's comments were after the game, can I do this? Can I let Kirby warm up and then replace him before he faces a hitter? And was told yes, but then obviously he could not. And I think one aspect of the rule that maybe was not well known at the time was if the Red Sox had put in a pinch hitter, then he could have done that. Then he could have replaced Kirby with Romo before a pitch was thrown if there was a pinch hitter, but there was not. And I think to Scott's credit, he said, it was my fault. I should have known the rule. And he's right about that. But the other part about it that I'm a little bit bewildered by was when I saw Kirby get out of the previous inning, the fifth inning, and he faces the iron of the Red Sox lineup and gets through them on a key double play ground ball, I thought for all the world he was done. And he had just gotten through a tough part of the lineup. It was a lot of pressure pitches that he had. I thought he was done. And I was just surprised to see him come back out to begin with. And so that for me was the surprise. The rule and the really unique interpretation of it, that certainly had a bearing on the outcome of the game, I believe. But probably more so than that was, what was the idea and the uncertainty about Kirby going back out? Because for me, after five, he was done. He worked a tough inning. He got an inning-ending double play. He earned his stripes. He could have departed with a good feeling after five innings. I was just surprised. I'm not saying it was the wrong call. I was just surprised when he came back out, and then all of a sudden the confusion ensued, and it was quite a story there for a while.
JP, I always root for Dylan Moore. I just love it when he has a good night. He had four RBIs, a three-run knock over the Green Monster there. So that was really cool to watch. Same thing with him and Toro as well. Just, you know, those kind of utility guys. I always root for them. They're kind of like the underdogs.
Yes. They are. And it reminds me, you know, Dylan a little bit. I had a nice conversation with him yesterday before the game. In terms of his profile and how he plays, how he values versatility, just even in the way he talks to you, reminds me a little bit of Willie Bloomquist, who have obviously had a long career with the Mariners, and I think had some really valuable years there. And I think that's the kind of player that he is. He's played with multiple different organizations, has really embraced his role here now. Obviously played shortstop yesterday at Fenway. He can play the outfield, as we've seen. He can move around the diamond. And I think when you consider where we are now in the game with rosters and the number of relievers that everybody carries, it's really important for guys who are part of your rotation of players to be like Moore, to be like Toro, and be able to move around and play different spots. So I think they both have really important roles on this team. I think Frazier's ability to go out there and play left field, I think, was crucial. I think last night you just saw, and listen, they put together, I thought, some pretty good at-bats. Early on, they had a very good game plan against Rich Hill. I just think that we probably saw when J.P. Crawford is not in there, it's a different team, and I think it was a natural thing to give JP the day off. They had the long travel day. I think it's important to point out for our listeners that when you leave Toronto now, it has become standard practice in baseball that you bus to Buffalo, because when you cross the Canadian border, as you may know from having gone to Vancouver over at Blaine, you don't have to test if you're going on land. You do have to test if you're going in an aircraft. And so basically now, every team that goes from Toronto back to the States drives to Buffalo, goes through customs there, which is good because you don't have to worry about the testing, but not so good because it takes more time. And I think that is it's a very arduous thing, a night getaway from Toronto to travel and take the bus. I mean, you're not getting in until the wee hours. So I think yesterday was a tough day to play no matter what against a team in Boston that was already playing at home and had actually a little bit of an earlier game on Wednesday. So it would have been a tough game to win no matter what, but it was made a little more of a dramatic moment by the pitching change that wasn't.
You just hit on something that I think a lot of fans are feeling frustrated about. And you brought up, you know, what the lineup looks like without J.P. Crawford. And he's such a weapon defensively, offensively. Ty France is the other guy you look at in that lineup, and you don't even think about it. They're the guys. But when they're not there, or they have an 0-for-4 night, or they have a couple of games where they don't hit, it feels like there aren't many answers in this lineup. I know Julio is really starting to come on a 3-for-5 night, but
yeah,
you know, you're counting on a 21-year-old to be consistent. I don't know that that's fair. Everybody else you're looking at going, yeah, they pop on this night, and then they'll go three games with very little to nothing, and then they'll have a big night here. You know, you can go up and down, whether it's Suarez, Winker, Torrens, Toro. It doesn't seem to matter. It feels like that's where the roster construction questions start to come in. And did we overestimate, you know, the talent that exists, how long this lineup truly is? Or do you just look at it as, hey, it's still a long lineup, a good lineup that's just underperforming right now?
Well, it's a very interesting question, Bob. There's a few ways to answer it. Number one, I think that what I would say, based on last night's performance, hey, the three of us were on point when we said in November, you should look at Trevor Story, right? We were on point there. Check the tape somewhere. Three homer game last night. We were on that in November. But in all seriousness, you compare. If you just look 1-9, okay, right now, without Mitch Haniger, I think that's the key one. Not having Mitch is a huge loss for them, because when you compare 1-9, objectively, what Seattle has right now, compare it to the Angels with Trout and Ohtani and Rendon and Taylor Ward, who's played great, and Brandon Marsh has played great. They've got a really good defense up the middle now. You compare that then to the Astros, and Jeremy Pena has basically out-hit Carlos Correa so far this year, and Altuve is still Altuve, and Yordan Alvarez is one of the best five or six power hitters in the game. Objectively, okay, objectively, Seattle's lineup is just not right now as good as the Angels or the Astros. They're just not. And I think that, to me, especially is the case without Haniger there. And you start to wonder, what is their path? What is their path from here to the postseason? I think the pitching is going to have to be excellent. And by the way, I think it is quite good on many nights. I think they've really had some good performances there. But the pitching is going to have to be extraordinary when you consider, especially again, how well the Angels have pitched. You've got Verlander looking like a Cy Young candidate again. You know, where are you better than your competition? And I think the Mariners, part of their story has been the rapid rise of the Angels and how good they've been. Because I think Seattle is about, maybe if you had had a healthier year from Haniger, I do think they might be missing that veteran leadership that Seager gave them. You look at how they reacted last year when the season ended. I think that was a big day for them. And it showed the emotion of how much they've missed that veteran presence that Seager brought. I just think they're missing a couple components, and they're in a division now where you're not getting any breaks because of how much improved the Angels are. And you got a team in the Astros that have been in the the Astros have been in the ALCS every year since 2017. So it's really hard to it's hard to find a way to I think chart that path. It's just more challenging than I would have thought at the outset to be able to find a way to compete against the Astros and the Angels.
He is our MLB insider and our NHL insider, brought to you by Stanford's Restaurant, John Morosi. We look forward to it every week, my friend. Have a great weekend. We'll do it again next week.
Sounds great, guys. I'll try to bring a little more optimism and maybe try to I feel like I'm still optimistic about this team. I really am. It's just they're in a tough division right now, and this is a tough stretch as they're waiting for Mitch to get back.
Well, you left us with smiles on our faces, JP.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, guys.
There you go. John Morosi with us every week, and he does bring a smile to our faces. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up, it is time to ask. Why, man? We do it every week. It's coming your way next. It's Wyman and Bob with Michael Bumpus. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
Tell me why.
Why, man? Why?
Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
He's a habitual line stepper.
What were you thinking? What are you doing?
Why are you the way that you are?
It's the Why Man of the Week.
We do it every week, and we love it because there's just no shortage of material. Bump, you've heard this before, right?
Oh, yeah, love it.
Yeah, it's the beauty of sports. You know, it's going to be a player, a coach, a commentator. Somebody is going to say or do something that makes you just shake your head and go, why, man? And this is one I think you would probably be dialed into because I know you're a big-time NBA fan. Pat Beverly had some interesting comments on Chris Paul. And talking about, you know, the fact that he can't guard anyone, and he compared him to a traffic cone.
Man, that. CP can't guard nobody, man. Everybody in the NBA know
can't
that.
Guard,
everybody
can't
know
guard
that.
Anybody.
What we call them? Cone. You know what you do with cones? Like when in the summertime, you got a cone. You make a move. What does the cone do?
Stay still.
Exactly. Yeah. He's a cone. Stop playing, man.
That's pretty cold, man. I mean, and then I love Matt Barnes going. I think we were looking at that video, Bump, when you were here before, where Matt Barnes just kind of took Beverly to task there. But yeah, that's he's an instigator. He's a great defender, no doubt. But I think Barnes nailed it when he says you're not the guy. You're not the guy you think you are. You know, we're role players. These are guys that'll be remembered. We're the other guys.
Here's the thing about Pat Bev. He'll have something on all of us, right? He played in the NBA for a long time. He'll play 10 plus years. He'll be on a roster. He'll always be able to lean on that. But that doesn't excuse just the annoyance that he is. He's just an annoying type of player. He's making his money doing that. And actually, he's smart because he's trying to open up a lane right now for him when it's all said and done with basketball. Because people love controversy. They love when commentators and analysts say stupid things. And that's what he's going to do. So good for him.
That's a good point, Bump, that he's setting himself up for his next career, right? You know, he's been playing since, what, 2013? So, yeah, I mean, he's had a good long run. He was in Greece before that. So, yeah, maybe this gets him on television in some way. But, yeah, anybody that – is he good? Is he good at defense?
I mean, he is. He's not Bruce Bowen. Yeah. I was saying that with Bump. I mean, Bowen was known to be a guy who could get on your nerves, who was incredibly physical, but a great defender. And I think Patrick Beverly is a good defender, very good. He's not to that level, in my opinion. I don't know if you agree or disagree, Bump. But, you know, after the two-hand chuck in the back of Chris Paul, that was such a chump move. That was chicken bleep. I just, as soon as I saw that, I was like, all right, I see who you are. That was lame.
Basketball fights are rarely like just
well that I mean he waited till Chris Paul walked past him, was completely past him, and then came up and two-hand shove in the back.
I feel like you've seen a lot of that. Even going back to with Jabbar, and you know, sometimes there would be those kind of sucker punches and stuff like
so
that.
So weak.
And also they're really good punchers, right, Bob? They have the
They're very schooled. They're very schooled. All right, we gotta run rapidly here. Ryan Fitzpatrick on America's Caddy talking about Tom Brady not shaking his hand after he beat him the first time.
Of all of the NFL teams that you've played for, what is your favorite moment?
Beating Tom Brady after the first time, because the first time he didn't shake my hand. So beating him in overtime, I was on the Jets, and I got to chase him down at the 50-yard line.
You had to chase him down, though.
Great game, Tom. Stay healthy.
Why do you think he didn't shake your hand after that first time when you beat him?
I don't know. Apparently, he hates losing more than everybody else hates losing. When he does lose, I want a handshake.
I like it. That sums it all up right there. I love it. Love it. He hates losing more than anybody else. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think he just handles it worse. That's all.
Well, maybe. Maybe. I don't know if I haven't heard that many complaints about Tom Brady. But
yeah. All right. That does it for us.
We're
going to send you to the Mariners pregame. Thanks, Bump. We appreciate you. We'll talk to you on Monday. Our thanks to Sergio Romo and John Morosi. If you missed any of it, head to seattlesports.com. Click the podcast tab. Click on our picture. It'll be right there waiting for you after the show. Click subscribe. We will talk to you on Monday right here with Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710.